Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. This week I sit down on Zoom with Louis Aguaris. Louis is a master chef, a longtime martial artist, and has a very interesting background from his military years. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and today I've got someone that I've been stalking for a while to get onto the show. He can tell you, I've been sending him messages for a long time. I've known this man, quite a few years, and I knew he'd be an interesting guest because of not only the variety of martial arts that he studies, but sort of his professional background, which is really interesting. So we have someone who is a culinary master as well as a martial arts master with us, and this is Louis Aguaris. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tim.
Thank
you. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. You've been asking me to come on the show, and I really appreciate your patience with my schedule, you know, teaching and great intro, by the way. I appreciate it. I don't know about master. I'm more of a student of life, a student, I do love martial arts and culinary arts, and those two worlds are my yin and yang, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of crossover that we'll get in. I guess let's start with how you got involved in martial arts.
So ever since I was a little kid in the Philippines, you know, so I'm Filipino Spanish, and a lot of people don't see that until they really get a chance to talk to me and get to know me and what like you have. So I grew up in the Philippines. In the Philippines, of course, there's the influence of Chinese cinema. So every Sunday there was Kung Fu Sunday, and then of course, you know, I got introduced with Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan, and so watching a lot of the martial arts as a kid, and plus I was super energetic anyway, so I started just mimicking the moves like a lot of people do as a kid, and my mom was like, all right, let me get you into some kind of schooling. And so I started taking Taekwondo. And so that's how I got started. I was taking Taekwondo in a school. It's an all-boys school in the Philippines called Don Bosco. And it was in Makati, which is very close to where we lived. And that's how I got started. And 1984, we came to the United States. And I basically lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan, didn't train there. But when I got to Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware, I enrolled in the very first school I could find that was close to the house, which is also Taekwondo. But it was an interesting mix because they did Taekwondo, Hapkido, and Kwambop, which is Korean karate, right? Oh. The Kwanjang Nim just basically just called it Korean karate, and it was a TKA system, Taekwondo, Apkido, and karate style. And so there was a mix of, kicking and punching, but then there was also joint locks and throws and what have you on there as well. And a lot of pumse, a lot of forms, you know, and so that's kind of how I got started. Perfect Weapon came out, and And I saw Jeff Speakman and the way he moved. And I was just like, oh, Kempo. I was like, so then it's, I started opening my world to different arts, not just, Korean karate and Korean martial arts. Now there's Chinese Kempo. And so living in Wilmington, Delaware, I also used to go to Philadelphia all the time. And the original Asian world martial arts. I don't know if you have the original Black Belt magazines with all
Yes.
the, yeah. So I used to go there.
Oh
Yeah.
man, because the back of the magazine you saw, and I grew up 2 hours away from Chicago, and they had the Chicago store, and I always wanted to go to the Chicago store, but I was too young to travel that distance to go. And so, but yeah, I always saw Philadelphia store, I knew was like the main one, and then they had the
Yep.
Chicago store. So yeah, I got their catalogs. I was always looking through it. So, oh man, you got to do one of my childhood goals, go to
That I used to go to Chinatown and then I
Asian
would go to Asian World Martial Arts. That was like my Disneyland. Like whatever I so I would it, th all throughout high school, I would work at a restaurant and on my days off, I would be at Asian World Martial Arts. I would go to Philly and I would just like I would buy sais, I would buy tonfas, I would buy staffs, nunchucks. I would just like whatever, throwing stars. My mom was like, "What are you doing with all this?" Right? And back then they would just sell it to me. I mean, I was like 16, 17 years old, and I don't think there was any restrictions back then, not as
That's
much
right,
as
ladies and gentlemen. The memes of Gen X is true. Yes, we
Gen
could
X, that's
buy
right.
any dangerous shit and run around and throw them at each other as kids. I don't know how most of us survived, but we did, I guess.
Oh my God. So a funny story, right? So friend of mine, neighbor of mine, we were just, oh man, he loved Rambo and I loved Ninja. And so we got dressed up. He got dressed up in all like fatigue and painted his face like, and then I got up in my full gear ninja outfit from Asian World Martial Arts. And then late at night, we would go over to a friend's house and just start throwing pebbles at the window. And until somebody came out, and we were waiting for a friend to actually come out the window, but the mom came out and she
Uh-oh.
panicked and she saw a ninja and a military guy and called the cops.
Oh,
And so the next week in school, my buddy was like, "Oh my God, there was a ninja and a Rambo guy, running around the neighborhood." And I was like, "Dude, that was me."
and that's right. Millennials, Gen Z, see, we are, I don't know if we're the original, but we cosplayed. That's the way we cosplayed back in the day.
So anyway, so that's how I got started. I know I kind of went all over the place, but martial arts has always been a part of my life growing up. It's something that I still every day, even if I'm not training, I'm reading. If I'm not, I'm always online looking at things, YouTube and whatnot, and just learning, like yourself,
Yeah. Well, can I take you back real quick to the Philippines? Because I think a lot of people are going to say, okay, you were born in the Philippines, you started your martial arts in the Philippines. I know from my visit there that Taekwondo was the one I saw the most there. So
Yeah.
people say, though, hey, why didn't you start in Arnis or Eskrima or Kali?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question. I figured you would ask this because this is something that I've asked myself too. It's really interesting, and I don't know where to kind of begin, whether it is Filipinos and themselves were not exposed to Filipino martial arts unless you're in that province. Growing up in Manila, and it's very cosmopolitan, I think they were very looking at like, oh, Taekwondo was growing and was big. My dad, my father, biological father, actually studied judo. Right.
Oh.
And so and the Jesuits would actually teach judo. So again, how Filipino martial arts, whether it's Kali, Eskrima, or Arnis, whether they were actually promoted you know, to different schools. That's one thing that didn't happen in the 70s or the 60s or the 50s. It was more like judo and taekwondo and karate, you know, whatever, Shotokan or something, you know. Those are the ones that was really promoted. I had an opportunity one time to go and train over in Luneta Park with the Illustrissimo guys. And I did a book tour, and it just, the schedule didn't happen and whatnot. But that was one of the things that I wanted to kind of ask people, the older generations of Escrimadores and Cali people, is what happened, you know. And it's not to say any blame or anything like that. It's just like, hey, we just find out, you know, it's history. My whole background is history as well. I have a degree in history and restaurant management. So I just wanted to ask some questions. I never got a chance to get a chance to train with Tony Ramos, you know, Tony. So that was one of the guys that I wanted to train with, and Peachy. I forget her last name, but she's one of the Cali people that trained with Illustrissimo, Tatan Illustrissimo. So anyway, so yeah, Taekwondo, I didn't learn about Cali until I came to the United States.
Ah, so that's
really interesting.
Did you hear of it as a kid? I mean, did you know the existence of the FMA?
No, not at all. I saw Bruce Lee and I saw what he was doing, but I didn't know about Jeet Kune Do yet. You know, I know that he was doing some stuff with the sticks, and I didn't know what that was. I thought that was cool, you know. And then there's an actor in the Philippines called Ramon Zamora, and he was like the Bruce Lee of the Philippines, and he was doing all these stuff. And I was just like, ah, oh, that's really cool. So names of styles was not like big with me yet, you know, and association of names and styles. All I know is like, that was a really cool move. That was a great kick. That was, you know, the jumping front kicks and spinning back kicks and all that kind of stuff, you know? But Taekwondo was like you said, Taekwondo and judo was huge in the Philippines, you know?
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause that's the few things that I've heard are either, Filipinos just didn't know of the existence of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now clearly they will, but back in that time, like when you were younger, or when I talked with Percival Pableo, who's a Dos Aperias guy, mm-hmm. Interviewed him for the subscription magazine, and great interview. And one of the things he talked about when he was younger, and he's, I believe, younger than me, so when he was a kid, he said the perception of Escrimadores, at least in that Cebu, was that these were drunk rabble rousers. So that could be, you know, part of an issue too. So either people haven't heard of it, or they think they're, you know, like ruffians. And like, mm-hmm. I know I don't want children being part of that. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure about that. So I'm not trying to spread rumors here on this thing. But
right.
About what?
Yeah, it could be possible. It could be possible. Yeah.
And
there's a certain area in the Philippines that people try to stay away from. And I remember talking to Guru Willie Laureano about this, because he's from that area, and he actually affirms it. It's called Tondo. And Tondo is a place where there was a lot of ruffians, and there was a lot of, you know, gangs and street fights all the time. And the Cali and Escrima was big then, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. I can see that happening, you know.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll fast forward a little bit. We'll go. So you, I know you definitely. I mean, not only as a brother in arms in FMA and JKD and that, but as a Kempo guy. And you said Jeff Speakman was your influence to get into that, and I could see that. That was actually, you know, that was a hot minute of popularity. That mm-hmm. perfect film that really, I think, garnered a lot of attention. And I think it, you know, brought a lot of attention, rightfully so, to Kempo, which I think is a martial art, you know, people should check out. It's pretty mm-hmm. Amazing art. And mm-hmm. So you got into that pretty heavy at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I started looking around different Kempo schools in the area as well. And a lot of it is, I would just mimic the movements and mimic the concepts, you know? And so I trained at one school just not even that long, because I really focused on my Taekwondo and Hapkido kind of background. But there was this American Kempo, and it's Ed Parker lineage. And if your listeners know this, you know, Ed Parker, Bruce Lee, they're like, they were right there in as far as the mindset of martial arts. And so the concept of American Kempo is very similar to Jeet Kune Do as far as economy of motion and, you know, having blocks and punches, you know, having that bong sao and pak sao and all that. A lot of the trapping, there's a lot of trapping in Kempo as well. And I love that because it kind of mixed in with, if you train Taekwondo, there's a range. And if you train Jeet Kune Do, there is a shorter range because it's very Wing Chun kind of influence. So you need to be a little bit closer to be able to have that energy, right? And with Kempo, it was the same. And I enjoyed that. And the several hits that happens in Kempo, there's a hit to the head, to the groin, to the neck, you know, and then, you know, solar plexus at the same time. When I mixed in a lot of the, like the throws and the takedowns from like the Hapkido, to me it made sense. And then later on, I see Bruce Lee doing the same thing too, and he does that, and he incorporates a lot of different styles in Jeet Kune Do. And so it was like, I was just fascinated about it. So I trained, but I didn't train a lot then. I tried to train more Kempo when I was in the military. And so when I went out to Hawaii, I started training a little bit more, got into Kaju Kempo. And that's like a Hawaii based kind of.
That's I know you. Okay. I keep forgetting whether it's Kempo or Kaju Kempo.
Yeah. Correct. It's Kempo. Kempo got me into it. And then I met some few guys in Hawaii. And Kaju Kempo was a big influence on that too, which Kempo was part of that, you know? So yeah, it's to me, you know, training and all these different styles, just added more, I don't know if it was confusion, but it added just a little bit more spices to whatever I was cooking. And I try to relate that to
nice cooking. Metaphor for you.
Yeah, right. And sometimes it's spicy, sometimes it's mild, and you know.
Right. So okay, so that actually, I think you answered a question I was going to ask, which was, you know, you were primarily East Coast, and I know there's a lot of Hawaiian flavor in your character, and so I'm thinking, how did you get to Hawaii? Now I know you joined the Navy. Right.
I joined the Navy. Yeah.
Okay. And then you ended up stationed in Hawaii. So,
yeah. And well, no, I was my last station was Hawaii. And that's where I really got to train Kaju Kempo, Kempo. And then I had an instructor, became a friend of mine. His name's Jack Abelira. And he has same thing, Filipino background. He's part Japanese, Filipino, Portuguese, born and raised in Hawaii. And so I started training a lot with him. He had a Kyokushin background too, you know, and so he was showing me a lot of that. So a lot of my Kempo and Kaju Kempo kind of came from that, along with Taekwondo. And he, you know, I didn't train Kyokushin, but he actually showed me some stuff, which is very, Masoyama came from a Taekwondo background and then created Kyokushin out of that, you know. So I grew up in the East Coast. I joined the military. I joined the Navy. I got stationed. This is my journey, right? So I wanted to be on a ship. I wanted to be on an aircraft carrier. I wanted to be out there, you know. So my choices were Yokosuka, Japan, Sigonella, Italy, and Rota, Spain. But better yet, what happened is when I joined the military, I had boot camp in Florida, and then I had culinary school in San Diego. When I was in San Diego culinary school, 3 weeks, 2 weeks into culinary school, these recruiters from Camp David came out. And Camp David, I don't know if you, a lot of people know this, but that's where the president goes for a retreat to get away from the White House, right? President of the United States.
And a lot and, of negotiation too, like
a lot of the, you know, the Geneva Convention and right. all that actually happened a lot there.
Israeli-Egypt peace treaty was there, and a lot of the Palestinian-Israeli negotiations were done there through different presidents. Yeah,
exactly. So I was interviewed along with 250 culinary students of the Navy, and I asked them. I said, "Why is it the Navy?" I said, "Well, A, because we can get the clearance in faster. B, it's already military. It's a military base. So Camp David is a military base. It's run by Marines and Navy personnel. And so I got recruited. I got my clearance. And that's my very first station was Camp David. And wow. I was a young chef cooking for Bush Senior, Barbara Bush and the Bush family, if they were there, and any guests that would come, you know, visit Camp David. And so fast forward a little bit. So I was only there literally about 10 months in Camp David. Then Clinton won the presidency, 1992. And then I was asked, would you, we have a position available. Would you like to go to the White House? Right. And I said, yes. yes, I will go. And so I went to the White House 2 weeks later, and I spent about 4 years at the White House and, you know, cooking for President Clinton. I even got a chance to take care of President Carter, Hillary Clinton, the senior staff members working in the West Wing and the residence. And then also got a chance to work at the French Embassy, too, because I met one of the chefs at the White House, and he also was the executive chef at the French Embassy. So I did a lot of that. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then I got a call, right? After about 4 years, I get a call, and one of my senior chiefs said, "Hey, we have a private chef opportunity in Hawaii. Would you be interested?" And my whole thing in life, and this is also, you know, throwing it out there for, you know, future martial artists, is like, if you have any opportunities given to you, take it, you know, and whether you're going to be scared about it or what have you. So I took the opportunity. So I went to Hawaii, you know, and I was one of the chefs for the 4-star admiral of SingPac Fleet. And this is the admiral that's in charge of all Pacific Fleet. And so I got to take care of him, his family. Worked at the residence and worked at the office. And after about 6 years in the military.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode with Louis Agoras. Coming up next week, another old friend of mine, retired canine cop, Steve Holly.
Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also, click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.